I've just heard for many years I worked on forests and indigenous rights, actually, because the two are very closely linked, especially in tropical forest areas. Worked for many years, I worked for Greenpeace, WWF, I was an advisor of the Papua New Guinean government, amongst other things. For many years, this issue of climate change occupied a different box for me, and it's something that I want to touch on when I talk, that it's very... Even people are absolutely in the middle of environmental issues, which is absolutely the fundamental thing that they work on, are capable of separating out different issues that they feel are too difficult to deal with and just focusing very clearly on one to the exclusion of something very much larger coming down the track. Now, when I was working at Greenpeace International, we were on one side of the hall, working, as I said, on tropical forests, and our lead campaign was the Amazon. On the other side of the same hall, was the climate change part of the organisation. We didn't talk to each other much. When we met in the pub, we'd just drink beer and gossip. We wouldn't talk about our issues. That's also something typical in environment organisations. Whilst we were launching the largest campaign that Greenpeace had ever run on the Amazon, the climate change part of the organisation was coming up with this new information, which had been pioneered in Britain through research by both the Hadley and the Tyndall Centre, saying that the Amazon, on current projections, could very well start burning down completely beginning around 2040 as an accelerating process of decline, that the central area of Brazil would start drying out as a result of repeated El Nino patterns, and that could be sufficient to turn the entire Amazon over from being tropical wet rainforest over to dry and open forest. And of course, the form of transition would be burned down, basically. We continue to plough full speed ahead on saying, don't buy mahogany, don't log the forest. At the same time, it was clear that there was this much bigger issue. And this was similarly has been happening all across people working on environment and social rights. I recently did a piece of research for a book in which I did a web search of leading organizations in the area of social rights, human rights, development, women's issues, third world issues, and so on, looking at these leading organizations, see how many times they mention the word climate change on their websites. Amnesty International does not mention climate change once anywhere on its website. CARE International, a huge international development organization, mentioned it, I think, four times. I also, just to be cheeky, did a comparative analysis around the words ice cream and donkeys. I thought I'd take them, which bore no relation at all to the core issues they work. Of course, donkeys have a slight developmental coverage. To my astonishment, consistently in organization after organization, the attention that they gave on their websites to ice cream hugely outpaced that they were giving to climate change. Ice cream, of course, being a controlled term on a very big website, all kinds of things appear on the website. I could have done it for Ferrari or sausages or anything. I chose ice cream. I was also being sneaky because Ben and Jerry's ice cream, which is a company, actually gives hugely more coverage to climate change on its website, because they're very engaged with that, than any of these leading organizations. They give, I think they give almost as much coverage to ice cream as the International Red, like, as much attention to climate change as the International Red Cross. I guess the point that I'm trying to make with this, and that I'll draw on also a little bit in my talk, is that we're very capable of separations in our own lives. We need to recognize that climate change is not in something in this environmental bundle or something that only, climate change campaigners work on, but as I'm sure that you're all very aware, something that's going to affect every single thing that affects us. When I became aware of that, I made a personal life decision that although I cared passionately about forests and indigenous rights and about people's rights, when I would work exclusively on climate change for the rest of my life. And that's something I sort of want to share with you, because that transition for me was not just important, but extremely relieving. I mean, it gave me a great kind of sort of inner sense of relief. But instead of hopping about from one thing to another, this was the big issue, and I would just focus entirely on this. And that therefore meant that if one thing I worked on didn't work so well, it doesn't matter, because it would be a learning experience rolling on to the next thing. That every project I worked on didn't have to succeed in its own right, but it could be something that would then feed into the next thing. And I just make a similar appeal to you. I think this is the biggest issue by far that we face, that we have ever faced, and everybody uses this kind of language. Bigger by far than anything that we've had to face with since we came onto this planet. And I think in terms of the scale of that, the moral the valid moral and emotional and intellectual responses to say, this is going to be the exclusive focus of our work, and that we can continue to work on the other things that we're concerned about, but this has to be absolutely at the centre of what we do. So that's just sort of the appeal I'd make to you. Try and put this absolutely at the core and the centre of your lives and your work, because the truth is every other thing that we care about will go down with it if we don't do something.
This was the introduction. Now comes the second part of the talk.
Eschew, is that the right word? The kind of PowerPoints, because I find it nice just to talk directly to you. But I will try and underline the key points that would otherwise appear in a PowerPoint. I find if I do PowerPoints, I get distracted and spend my whole time fiddling with the computer and so on. My topic is on educating the community. I guess the first thing I want to point out is what opinion poll research is telling us about actually the level of community knowledge about climate change. Now, on the face of it, it seems quite positive. Oh, incidentally, could I ask, could someone give me a sign when I'm 5 minutes to go and 2 minutes to go? Could you do that? That's great. So, generally speaking, in opinion polls, if people are asked, is the climate changing, there's a very high level of agreement, which has risen significantly over the last 5 years, to 85, to now over 90% of people recognise the climate is changing. Unfortunately, as we start to go further into the issue, we find that the level of agreement starts to slip. We say, is it caused by human activity? We're down to 60% of people in opinion polls believe it's human activity. So there's a significant number of people who still do not accept the human cause behind it. Now, there's a danger with these things that, of course, if you go up to people and say, you know, is such and such wrong or is it a problem, but people might have heard it's a problem, and they'll always say yes, but they don't actually know why it's a problem and therefore it doesn't really affect their actual behaviour in any way. So, if you ask people, is carbon dioxide a cause of climate change, then 71% of people say yes, like they've somehow caught on to that. But unfortunately, if you ask them, are other things a cause of climate change, they also give you high figures because they're issues that they've somehow picked up are problems and therefore part of a bundle. So, is the destruction of forests a cause of climate change? Well, yes, it is. But more people think it's a cause of climate change than carbon dioxide because they have heard that forest destruction is a problem. But you ask them about other problems. Is the hole in the ozone layer a cause of climate change? Well, 68% of people think it is. Well, it isn't. It shows there's a very major misunderstanding of the fundamentals of the problem that we have. Then in one interesting survey, people asked, are mobile phones mobile phone use a cause of climate change? 10% of people thought it was. Because they twigged that mobile phones were a problem. So what we have is a clear public misunderstanding about it. And I think something which causes me a lot of concern in terms of public awareness is a lack of awareness of the urgency of the issue. And this comes over again and again in opinion poll research. For example, if people are asked questions like, is it a threat now for us here and now or threat for future generations, the majority will always say future generations. Is it going to affect us a lot or a little? The majority are always saying a little. People are not twigging the seriousness or scale of this problem. Now, the government has in many ways been ahead of public opinion on climate change. They've actually fallen back a bit now, but for some time, rather than what we cynically think governments do, which is they kind of like wait for the electorate to push, they've actually been pushing, I think, in Britain, a bit ahead of where the public is. And they're now aware that they have this problem, but they're trying to push ahead with things which are now going to be more challenging from a policy point of view whilst the public aren't behind them. So, back in 2004, DEFRA, that's the Department of Environment, started a whole lot of research on the issue of how to change public attitudes on climate change, which, as all these government things, rolled out very, very slowly, but finally led to the announcement at the beginning of last year that they would fund local organisations to do direct engagement with the community on the issue of climate change. the fund mysteriously kept shrinking and the time that it was actually going to happen kept extending out. But finally, they announced it, and 2 months ago, they produced the results of what will be, for the first time, around £2 million of funding through the government, direct to people who are engaging with the community. It's a very exciting new development. You can find all about that on a website called Climate Challenge. I think it's climatechallenge.org. You can find it on the web. I thought I'd share with you what some of these projects are, and wonder if you can guess what organisations they come from. Protect and Conserve. Who do you think that might be working with? It's actually aimed at Thames Valley Police. It's definitely a new audience for climate change communications. Be prepared for the future. Scouts, you got it, exactly. Bring climate change home. WI, okay, I'm getting it. This is one which I really like. So What? The pub quiz. That's happening down in Cornwall. We're going to hear from Poppy, Forum for the Future, which you work for, is doing really interesting. I've got a really interesting project for engaging directly with farmers and landholders. I think the point is that there's actually really, really interesting work which is happening. And what all of these projects have in common, or the ones which got funded have in common, is, I think, three fundamental principles for educating and engaging the public. They're thinking outside the environmental box. It is clear that we cannot engage people on climate change if we call it an environmental problem, because then people go, well, I'm not an environmentalist. And a big problem for climate change has been for a long time, as I kind of said in my introduction, that people think it is an environmentalist problem and that they're a human rightsist or something else, and they're not even concerned with these kind of issues at all, and therefore they go, okay, it's something for someone else. So we're out of that box now. The second really important quality is peer-to-peer. A lot of these projects involve people talking to people like themselves. And we know this is absolutely a key to moving things. You know, for so long on climate change, it's been scientists speaking in scientific terms to the public, talking about parts per million volume of these kind of obscure trace gases, and they just lose people. It's clear if people think it's caused by the ozone layer, it has not been communicated well. What does work, though, is having a member of a local gardening association standing up and saying, I'm really concerned, my friends and colleagues, I'm really concerned because this is what it means for our gardens. Peer-to-peer, people speaking to each other, thank you, in terms of the values and the language that they understand is fundamental, I think, to communicating this issue. Breaking it down into things which speak directly to people's own interests. I think also these projects have a quality that they are highly innovative in terms of finding new ways of communicating. For far too long, environmental organisations, which, I'm very actively involved, have been basing this around their kind of communicating, which is around, newsletters, books, articles in the media, reports. Oh, the number of reports on this. I don't know who even reads them. I mean, I don't even have the time to read them. I work on this. And what we're looking at is much more interesting ways of engaging, using the web, using mobile phones, using personal-to-personal contact. All of this is very promising, and all of these are key features for how we educate the public. The weakness of this DEFRA scheme, and this is what I want to kind of draw out because it's absolutely fundamental, is that when DEFRA set this up, they created a division between attitudinal change and behavioural change. They said very clearly, we will not fund behavioural change. We want to change people's attitudes, to soften them up for the behavioural change. And the assumption behind all of this is that we're all highly rational people. This is an assumption, right? But people are rational, but if they're presented in a clear and understandable way with the issues and the threats, that they will then say, right, how can we change how we behave? Now, that is not how humans behave, and I suggest that's not how probably... even with the best will in the world, most of us here in this room behave. The connection between information, that's to say, attitudinal change, and behavioural change is a very complex and non-direct one. Now, As humans, I think we have this remarkable ability to disconnect the information that we receive when it challenges us and when it kind of puts us in a position of like making moral decisions from the behavioral changes that we need to make to deal with that challenge, especially when those behavioral changes are in some way powerful and that they're somehow challenging or inconvenient or not fun. Right? We were talking about flying earlier. Not flying is not fun. Flying isn't much fun, but getting places is fun. And people are highly capable of disconnecting the two, of knowing something, and sometimes knowing something in a huge amount of detail, but not actually changing their behaviour. The figures bear this out, I have to say, but whilst there's this very high level of public concern about climate change, home energy consumption inexorably is on the same line that it's been since the 70s of rising by 2% a year. There has been no measurable change in human behaviour in Britain, anyway, in social behaviour, in any way in response to the climate threat. Flying has doubled since the early 90s when the Kyoto Protocol was negotiated and the climate issue really blew up. Just keeps going up and up and up and up. There's a kind of a technical term, of course, a psychological term for this disconnection, which is cognitive dissonance. And cognitive dissonance is one of the key components, thank you, of denial. I'm not going to dwell on denial as an issue, but I'm going to say, if people can separate the information from the action, we cannot assume that by giving them more information, that we necessarily get more action. In fact, such is the nature of denial that there's a very high risk. But if we completely persuade people of what an appalling, catastrophic disaster climate change is, that they could go deep into their denial and just say, I can't deal with this, and block it out. Now, all of the research supports this contention, but if you give people information without linking them directly what they can do, that you actually can produce negative results. And DEFRA's own consultant said, and I quote, urgency without agency will not be effective. So I'd say that the fourth thing, which is a key component for educating the public, is that the two things have to be absolutely tied together. That all engagement concerning the threat of climate change has to be linked up with the actual practical steps that people can take. Now, research also shows, and this I think is even more interesting, but getting people to change their behaviour can happen with relatively little information on threats. And in fact, but awareness of issues often follows action, but it's actually the reverse of what we're assuming. But therefore, if you can get people to start taking action, they will start to become aware and clued in to the various reasons why they might want to do it. And we've seen this with recycling, for example. There's been a lot of social research on recycling that shows that if you go out to people and say, you know, talk to them about landfill sites and how horrible waste is and so on, and that's why they should recycle, you get much poorer results than if you actively encourage and support people in the act of recycling as a behavioural change. That it's something that they can do, that it's easy, that it's simple, something they can do. But then people become much more receptive to all of the reasons for doing it. Right? Now, you're all, I know, highly moral people, but you're guided by your strong sense of morality and you're kind of like your spiritual calling also to do stuff on this. But I would suggest to you that you're not typical of... but you're not typical of the general public. Market researchers talk in various ways about segmenting audiences on communications, and I've got it, so I'm going to try it now, of dividing between what they could call pioneers, prospectors, and settlers. Pioneers are people maybe like ourselves who are people who are inwardly driven to create change. This relates, I think, to what Poppy's going to come on to. But there's a much larger bulk. The settlers at the other end are people who are actually quite conservative and their concern is security. But in between, there's this very large bulk of people who marketers would call prospectors, and they're people who are driven by a sense of wanting to be of status, wanting to be ahead of a curve, wanting to be in with something new, wanting to be to get validation and status for what they do. And therefore, I would suggest that the key issue for educating the public about climate change is to find a way of appealing to that. Maybe not talking as much as we could do about how horrible it is, but actually talking about how, hey, you know, all of that old carbon stuff, that is so 20th century. You know, this is, yeah, that's, That's so over, you know. Solar panels, wow, they're so fun. Look, you get this little box of lots of diodes and it lights up and, you know, you can see that appeals to a male audience, you know. Not dealing with huge queues at airports and 3-hour check-ins, but like, you know, hey, I just went on holiday, you know, I just went on holiday to Cornwall, it was great, you know, everybody spoke English, you know, no spicy food. I'm just pointing out that actually you can get people to change their behaviour without whacking them overhead with climate change, but actually, once you get that behavioural change happening and it becomes an aspirational thing that people aim towards, but then you can start to feed in, oh, by the way, we're all going to have to do this. Say you're really on the front line of making that change. So that maybe educating the public can actually not even be about climate change. It can be about all of the other reasons and the things for doing things. So I'll just sum up the points, I guess, that I'd really like you to go away with is there's an urgent need, because we know that the public isn't engaging properly, but there is already really good work going on. There's really exciting groundswell of engagement with the community. But these principles are ones of like of peer-to-peer speaking to each other and so on, finding innovative ways of doing things. But we have to think in a very, very creative way about how to get that behavioural change ahead of attitudinal change by maybe selling it on different points other than just simply the end of a planet, which isn't, you know, which isn't the cheeriest of topics. Okay, thank you.